tremendous kavod for me, as it is every year, to introduce my Rebbe, to speak, to give us a little hadracha here at Yeshiva. My Rebbe happens to be an expert in the topic of shiduchim. He organized the shidduch of myself with Hal. And many, many other shiduchim for many, many individuals. I'll speak about it in a second. I first wanted to thank Izzy and Barbara Grossman for sponsoring tonight's shiur. It's very, very special to me, and I'm sure to the Rebbe as well, that the shiur is being sponsored with Zecher Nishmas, Barbara Grossman's father, Rav Zerubbabel Shusheim, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. I had this chus when I was studying in the Kol Yeshiva University. I learned the Chavrusa at the same table as Rabbi Shusheim, the back table of the Kol Beis Medrash on the third floor, first hall. I assume it's still called that. And Rabbi Shusheim, I had a chance to talk to him in learning many, many times. And such a Avod with a Nechmad and a special Talmud Chacham, who I personally benefited just from watching him interact with people and the way he learned. And it's a special schus that tonight's shir is L'Iloi Nishmaso. The Rebbe has given many, many, many Talmidim over the years hadracha, guidance in all areas of life. I often say that Rebbe in many ways is like the grandfather of our yeshiva, because a Rebbe is supposed to be like a father, so the Rebbe's Rebbe is like a grandfather, shepherding tremendous joy and nachas from the Talmud Torah that goes on in every facet of our yeshiva. I'll just share one final anecdote. I think that my Rebbe is uniquely suited to speak about this very, very sensitive topic. I can say that one of the biggest, I have many, many, many things that I have tremendous hakaras hatov to my Rebbe for. And up there among the biggest of the issues of Hakaras HaTov that I have for my Rebbe is the guidance that he has given me and my wife. The guidance that he has given us about how the appropriate way to conduct a home, a bias, is. And starting from the first piece of advice that Rebbe ever gave me in marriage, which was, whatever your wife says, do. That was the first piece of advice. A lot of that has to do with the fact that he knows my wife very well. But in all matters of this very, very sensitive topic, the Rebbe always displays amazing sensitivity, understanding, and has really instilled within, I know just from my own personal dealings, but in so many homes, the appropriate way. And of course, that's the next step. That's not really what tonight's about. Tonight's about how to get there. But the Rebbe has given so many people the correct Torah, Hashkafa, and Hadracha from a halachic point of view, and a Hashkafa point of view of the process of choosing a mate, and then ultimately having shalom bias and a fantastic home. And for that I have tremendous hakaras hatov to the Rebbe for the time and effort that he gives to all the Talmidim in this area. So it's a great kavod for us today to hear Divrei Torah from Rav Mordechai Willits.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Kamenetsky. We went too far in his introduction this time. I forgot, it's my fault. I usually give him a very strong warning. Okay, if you invite me back again, if I decide to come back again after this introduction, I'll try to remember to give that warning. But I am very happy, and frankly, I was unaware of the fact that this is in memory of Rabbi Shussheim, because I was also privileged to know Rabbi Shussheim, as I'm privileged to know his illustrious son-in-law from way back when we were having fun together a long time ago in our Beis Medrash, in our yeshiva. Rabbi Shussheim was literally an unsung and unrecognized hero. He was not an individual who sought the limelight. He, I believe, had a desire to stay away from it, and he was successful. He was successful, and he always shunned it in his entire lifetime. Only after his patira, frankly, was some of his greatness revealed. Remember the Hespedim and the outpouring and the recognition of the inner greatness of this tzaddik and Talmud Chacham. And I'm so happy that it's continued in the next generation. So it's a schus to be part of this, and I wish the family continued nachas from their children. And I wish everybody here in the room, and so many familiar faces, I cannot recognize any of them publicly, there's just too many. But it really is a privilege to be a part of this community, even on an occasional basis, to speak to so many wonderful people who are so sincere in their efforts to continue a Torah way of life. And we'll be discussing together this evening a critical stage of this continuity, the stage of Shiduchim. And I didn't create this title. This title was created either by Rabbi Kamenetsky, perhaps by Rabbi Emerson. I don't know who to blame. They called it Shiduchim Halacha and Hashkafa. So I was scratching my head, what do they mean by Halacha of Shiduchim? I just was asking, what do they mean by that? So I'll just give you a few possibilities of what they meant, and then afterwards they'll tell me if that's what they meant or not. What could it be Halacha of with respect to Shiduchim? I'll give you a few things that come to my mind. One, Hilchos Lashon Hara. Not limited to Shidduchim, but we know it's so sensitive, and I get these questions all the time. What must I tell? What may I not tell? I should tell, I can't tell, I must tell. Ooh, so complicated. What must be revealed? Right? This is Lashon Hara from the perspective of someone who wants to reveal something about somebody else. What the person himself or herself? What's the disclosure obligation? That's one. I mean, I'm just going to tick off topics, and then I'll ask for a show of hands if there's some topic I left out. I'll try to come back to it briefly before we get to the Hashkaf. That's one. A second, I thought maybe he meant the laws of Shadchanos, the whole Simon and Choshen Mishpat, you know, who you have to pay for someone who's, in effect, a broker, a marriage broker. Right? People pay a lot of money here for real estate brokers, you know, what about a marriage broker? Is there a requirement to pay? And if so, how much? And what has to be spoken in advance or later? How much does a custom play a role? It's a second issue of halach, which relates to Shiduchim. A third question may be, well, what kind of shidduchim may a person get involved with? May a person arrange a shidduch for people who are not observant? And maybe not keep all the halachas pertaining to marriage? That's a serious question of shidduchim. Then, of course, there's a sad question. So what happens if a shidduch breaks up? When may it be broken up and under what conditions? Do you have to give back the ring? Do you have to give back the presents? There are a few others, but I want to open the floor for additional suggestions. What else did you have in mind when you read the title? You came, I assume, because you saw the title. What do you think Rabbi Kamenetsky or Rabbi Emerson meant when they spoke about halachas of shidduchim? Please feel free to give suggestions. I don't want it to be a monologue. There's a large ladies section here tonight, Baruch Hashem. I'm sure there's a Bina Yaseira that's here. What else is in the laws of shidduchim? Anybody? Men or women or youngsters? Inquisitive high school students? Who are just happy to be puffed from this problem right now? Yes?
I was thinking maybe it's the halakha that everyone should be involved in some way with.
Okay, that's very good. Do I have a responsibility to involve myself in making shidduchim for other people? Excellent question. If no one else raises their hand, I will just proceed to discuss what we've spoken about so far briefly. Anyone else? Okay, you can think about it a little more while I talk. Let me, your question is the first question, very important question. There are those who understand a critical mission that every individual has, and as a matter of fact, according to our rabbis in Masechta Shabbos, it is one of the questions that's asked first to a person when it comes to the ultimate reckoning in the world to come. Where he's asked, Asakta b'piri v'rivya. Now, traditionally, Asakta b'piri v'rivya has meant, do you get married and try to have children of your own? But that's not really an asik. So the word seems to be too broad. So there are those who understand, Asakta b'piri v'rivya, did you, were you involved in shiduchim? Did you try to match other people so that they can have children of their own? So the answer, according to that interpretation, is not only is it a requirement, but it's one of the first questions to ask up there. You come up to Shemayim and they ask you, by the way, did you make Shidduch? What? Where did it say you have to make Shidduch? We warned you, Asakta b'piri v'rivya. Sure, it's something which you should be doing if you can do it. If you have the aptitude, if you have the smarts, you have the insight to do it. If you don't do it. And a person should know himself or herself. I do feel that those who are involved in the actual shidduch process, I'm not discussing ideas anyone can have, noshim v'taf, but in the go-between aspect of shidduchim, someone should be a married person. I don't believe that this system that we have sometimes today of youngsters who are unmarried being go-betweens in shidduchim is a good idea. You have an idea, you're single, pass it off to someone who's married, let them do it. And this brings me to the second halakha question I want to discuss, which is there a concept of a shatchin who gets paid? If you look at Shulchan Aruch, you see there are three stages to shidduchim. Three. The idea, the one who suggests the idea. The mitavech, we'll call him, the one who does the back and forth, the negotiator. And then there's the gomer, the one who does the closure. What's the guy's name in the Yankees? Rivera, is that his name? The closer. He's the gomer. He didn't do so well in the World Series, a couple of episodes, whatever it is. But that's not here. So according to some of the Mefarshim and Chosh and Mishpat, it splits three ways. If one had an idea, and a second did the back to the negotiations, and a third was a closer, so perhaps if there's an X amount that's given for the shidduch, that it should be split three ways. And there are all kinds of halachic discussions about these things. Now, in the more modern Orthodox community, to use that phrase, the idea of paying a shatchan is really not so well established. Now, I must tell you that I'm not so good at this. My wife is much better. And when we got married, I'm proud to say that my wife made three shidduchim within 2 years. All three were her classmates in a school which was then known as High Life. That's where she went to school. High Life. Now you can say it's called Haftar, you can say it's called Darche, depending on which way you want to go. Right? And the three young men were all Talmidim in Yeshiva Sarvedis Kochonan. Guys in Mariyu Smicha. Right away she made three Shidduchim. She subsequently made two additional Shidduchim. For some, a little bit later, but then afterwards she stopped knowing the young ladies. It became difficult. She said, "You know, I'm basically retired because I don't know the young ladies well enough to be able to get involved so much." So, if you are in a situation where you know, and it's a little bit age dependent, by all means, if you have insight, you have to obviously have insight for this. Certainly, should be trying to be involved in shidduchim. Just blind dates, you know, put together. You know, that's not necessarily a mitzvah. I mean, it could work sometimes, but it could also not work sometimes. It's a little dangerous. Again, but if you have the ability, and some of you, I'm sure, in this room have an ability, please use it. All abilities that you have are given to you by Kadosh Baruch Hu should be used for Shem Shemayim. And so this is one of them. Please, if you have it, use it. Okay? What must be disclosed in a shidduch? This is a really amazing piece I'm going to share with you from the Kilas Yaakov, from the Stipula in the Sefti of Amos. The Gemara tells quite a remarkable story of Memhei, of an individual who could not find a suitable marriage partner for a simple reason. Although he was Jewish, his father was not. Now, if your father is not Jewish, your mother is Jewish, you are Jewish. Absolutely, 100%, not 50%. 100% Jewish. Nonetheless, you know, people look for the Mechutanim. And no one wanted to marry because they heard his father was not Jewish. No one wanted to marry him. So he went to, I believe it was Rava, one of the Amoraim, and he told him, go into Golis. Go into a faraway city or country, and there you get married. Now, obviously, the intent of this advice was not to tell anybody in the other country his father's a goy. What are you gain? Frek the stipel and Kilas Yaakov, how could you not disclose that your father's a goy? Isn't that what we call a mum, a blemish? Don't you have to reveal all blemishes when you're involved in interpersonal relationships? If you sold a car, what did they say about Nixon? Would you buy a used car from this man? Because the assumption of that question is that you're supposed to reveal all the blemishes. So this type of an amazing answer. The reason why I'm required to reveal every blemish in my automobile, before I sell it to you, is because you could find an equally excellent automobile without the blemish for the same price. And therefore I'm fooling you by failure to disclose the blemish. This is true, writes Akilas Yaakov, of possessions. I'll tell you a house, and I'd like to tell you that there's something major wrong about some aspect of the house. You can buy the same house down the block, more or less the same house, and more or less the same money. You know, a lot of houses here in the five towns. But no human being has a clone, has a carbon copy. So, if a person gets married, he doesn't tell his prospective or her prospective spouse that somewhere on the bottom of the big toe there's some kind of a blemish. Because he or she couldn't find the same wife or husband with everything identical without the blemish in the big toe. Not benimta, not to be found in this world. And therefore there's no need to disclose. So you may ask, so how bad can a blemish be? And I still don't have to disclose it. Gives the stipler an incredible answer. Only if the blemish is so bad that we can, by our sincere effort to try to really figure it out, a person would walk away from the marriage post facto. After being married and discovering this blemish, you'd walk away. If it was that serious, you must disclose it, otherwise not. That's a mind-boggling psak. I'm told that this type of mechutin, Rav Eliashiv Shlita, disagrees and says the Gemara is only referring to an external blemish. The father is not Jewish. But any internal blemish must be revealed. So you'll ask, if that's the case, someone with a blemish will never get married. Tell them up front, I have this, I have that, I have the other thing. You never get to the front door. It's true. My psak, therefore, is a compromise. A person who has a blemish of this magnitude should certainly reveal it, but not the first date. So then when? I always answer, halfway through. What's that? In some yeshivas, after 3 days. And in some places, after 3 months. It all depends on the different paces that we go at, which is maybe another topic of discussion. How long should the couple know each other? We'll get to that. But that's what I tell people, and I've had it. There are a couple of people in my community who were diabetics. So I told them, you don't have to tell the girl before you go out you're a diabetic. She won't go out with you. Wait till you're halfway through, which let's say it was about a month in those cases. And after you've established a rapport, a relationship, a connection, then you say, you know, I have to tell you, I have diabetes. So she may say, I'm out of here, and be furious, a chutzpah. You led me on for a month, you didn't tell me. I say, blame it on me. Blame it on me. I'll take the blame. You didn't come yell at me. Those two cases, they got married, Baruch Hashem, and they're living happily, and they're made by mitzvahs already. Hashem should be marach yameh mishnoseyim betovah v'animim. I had a case which is remarkable. the other way. Just to give you an example, a full range. A case of a a Talmud of mine called me up after he was engaged that he doesn't know what to do because the mother or the girl or the mother told him that there's a significant medical issue that the Kala has, and it's genetic in nature. This fellow was studying to be a doctor himself. I can't advise you. Well, he went down to, I think, the Johns Hopkins, the biggest hospital in the country in this particular condition, and he said, I have all this information, what should I do? I said, I'm not telling you what to do. He broke it up. And I received an irate phone call from the mother of this Kala, who was herself an almana. Her husband had died of this very same condition. And I went to the house to be yelled at. I made a special trip from. How often do you do that? I think Kol Amona V'Yosam Lo Sa'anas. Not only you should not torture them, you should go and be tortured by them, and that'll make them feel better. That's what I did. I went. Just I knew what was going to happen. I went to be yelled at, and this is what this woman told me. My husband was a Talmud of the Rav. So when he passed away, and I had this daughter, I went with my rabbi in my community to Boston to see the Rav. I described everything, and the Rav said, you don't have to reveal it. Maybe the Rav held like a stipend, and in this kind of a case, it wasn't that serious, and he'd walk away after being married. So they got engaged. She said, and I couldn't sleep at night. I couldn't sleep at night knowing that I'm not disclosing this to this young man who's coming in unsuspecting. Couldn't do it. So I told him. And he walked away. And she was under the impression that I told him he was supposed to walk away. Because maybe he'd try to take my words and try to cover for himself a little bit. You know, okay. But I said, no, I did not say that. So I said, what I did say is, it's really your own decision. I didn't say how to stay in the marriage. That would be terrible advice. It's a personal decision. You know, statistics, X percent, Y percent, you know. Serious. I spoke, I think it was last year, 2 years ago, about this whole thing with the BRCA. BRCA 1 and BRCA 2 with these genes. It's very complex. Exceedingly complex. A lot of, you know, I have to end at 10 o'clock, and it's already 9:30. I'm going to cut the halakhic part very short. But each one of these topics can really be an entire shir. We're talking about the disclosure on the part of the prospective marriage partner. What about other individuals who know these things? Reveal this, reveal this, don't reveal this. There's so many terrible stories where people are divorced in horrific situations, and then after, oh yeah, I knew about this in advance. I just didn't tell you about it. I didn't want to bother you. I didn't want to tell you. The Chafetz Chaim once said, he was the number one campaigner in the whole wide world against Lashon Hara. He said, the problem is, in those few cases where you're required to say Lashon Hara, heaven clams up. Yes, you should carry around with you that I used to have in my wallet, the seven conditions under which you may tell people, must tell people, Lashon Hara L'Toelas. And if you can meet all seven, you're required to do so. There's so many horrific stories. I knew he was. I'm embarrassed to say this to finish the sentence. Such unbelievable things. Just didn't tell you about it. My belief is that even after they're engaged, you should speak up about it. Very uncomfortable. Very. Do it anyway. So what'd you do this for? Blame it on me. Other people yell at me. Rabbanim had to be yelled at in these kinds of situations. But if you can save someone from quote falling in, you've done a great mitzvah. And yes, a sakta b'piri v'rivya, because you will hopefully be creating better homes with more stable marriages, with better children. I think I'm going to go to the part two, even though we really didn't cover all of the part one. Maybe I'll leave a few minutes over for questions. I know there's a mire deadline. Let me speak more to some of the hashkafa of Shidduchim, which of course also relates a little bit to halachic matters. In teaching my Talmidim in the yeshiva about Shiduchim, I use as my text Parshas Chayesar. Parshas Chayesar, as we well know, is the story of the first Jewish Shidduch. Right? How Avraham met Sarah, nobody knows. The pizza shop, I don't know how Avraham met Sarah, I don't know. But it's not written because it wasn't presumably a quote Jewish Shidduch. But now that Avraham and Sarah are the first Jews, first Israelites, first members of Klal Yisrael, if you will, and now they have a son Yitzchak, so they have to figure out what to do with him. The Eliezer is dispatched to go to a faraway land to find an appropriate marriage partner. Ask the Ran and the Drushes, why send him to a faraway land? To paraphrase the Medrash, Halolo of the Avodah Zarah, Valolo of the Avodah Zarah. The Avodah Zarah worshippers both in Canaan, where they lived, in Eretz Yisrael, as well as in Avraham Avinu's birthplace. Answers the Ran a critical, critical answer. He says, you know, it's true the theology was different, was similar. They were idol worshippers in both places. But you know, theology can be learned and unlearned. You can deprogram someone. It's done regularly. But what is difficult to unlearn, which goes down Beirusha, more than anything else, character traits. And the character traits in Eretz Canaan were abysmal. Worse than even those in the not so great Padan Aram, or the areas of Urkastim, of Choron, to which Eliezer was dispatched. And therefore, it was critical to go to a faraway place to find individuals who were brought up with good midos, because good midos is the most important part of Shidduch. The most important part. Eliezer, the first thing he does, the very, very first thing he does, is to daven. That's how it starts. Eliezer takes his entourage, and the first thing he says, Vayomar Hashem Elokei Adoni Avraham, he davens to Hashem. Asei Chesed im Adoni Avraham. Before entering into the parsha of Shidduchim, the most important thing for the young man and woman and for the parents is to daven, is to pray. Al kein yispalel kol chosid le'eis mitzo, zuisha, motza isha motza tov. You have to daven. I will give you a compliment about my wife. When I became a chosin, my mother of blessed memory said, erot gut gedavent. But I davened well to be privileged to have such a wonderful wife. That was their amunah. Yes, it was suggested by someone. There were always suggestions, and there were always intricacies and details and stories. But you have to daven. Men and women and their parents. And what midah do you look for? So we're accustomed that we look for the midah of chesed. Of course, everyone knows. I'll ask for water for myself. She'll volunteer water for the camels. Great. But the Kli Yakar points out time and time again in this parsha, there's another midah to look for. That's the midah of tzinius, the midah of modesty. On this very pasuk, Hashem Elokei Adonai Avraham Hakreino Lefonai Hayom. What is the shoresh of the word Hakre? Mikre, a happenstance. What kind of happenstance? Says the Kli Yakar, and I quote, Sheyazmelo Hashem Nara Chashuva, an important and good young woman, She'ein Darko Lotzeis Klal, who was not outgoing, who's not a gadabout, who's not someone who's always found at the Be'er. Remember, the Be'er was the candy store. Or maybe the pizza shop. He's asking for a near miracle that a woman who's never seen in these parts should suddenly that night be, or that day be seen. And in a pshuto shel mikra pshat contrary to Rashi, he says, we read it two psukim later, a very good looking woman, v'ish lo yida'ah, literally, no one knew who she was. How do we know that no one knew who she was, says the Kli Yakar? Because Eliezer did something which maybe the young men here who are not yet married should know, you're not supposed to do. He saw a wonderful young woman in a crowd, and he said to her, who are you? What's your name? You don't do that. You ask somebody else. Who's she? Or who's he? Basics, basics, everybody say, basics. So the Kli Yakar Eliezer knew the basics. He asked everybody in the crowd, no one knew who she was. Ish lo yada. He has no choice but to ask about Smiya. Quote again. Hutzrach lishol basmiat. Kilo yotas me'olam ki bapam zeh. Ishlo yadosh lo yashum echa makira. Why didn't he ask the Shar Naras who were there? They didn't know it, didn't know. To make a very long schmooze, very short, I believe that these two midos of chesed and tznius are two sides of the same coin. What is chesed? To help another. What is tznius? To hide yourself. Goes together. If you want to show how great you are, you're not going to want to help another. One of my proofs that the two are similar is the opposite phrase. What's the opposite of chesed and the opposite of tznius? Phrases used by the Kli Yakar in the parasha itself. Tells us about the various items which are given by Eliezer to Rivka. Gives her nezem zov beka mishkolo. Rashi says as reference to the Machtis HaShekel, to the Yaseres HaDibros, and the Shteluchos, explains the Kli Yakar so beautifully. This is the idea of the Ayin Hara. If you count without the half shekel, cause the plague. Happened in David HaMelech's time. To this day we count items and not people. Beli Ayin Hara. The Luchos too. The original Luchos, as Rashi tells us in Parshas Kisisa, in the Pasuk of Alei Elai Hahara, Nitnu Bekolos Uvichuos, we give with great fanfare and publicity. Shota Ben Ayin Hara. The evil eye somehow seized hold of it and they were broken. Concludes Rashi, Ein Lecha Yofa Ben Atzis. Ayin Hara is the opposite of tznius. When you flaunt what you have, you look in the first half of Baba Basra. You're supposed to hide your possessions. What is Ayin Ra? Similar phrase. The opposite of chesed. We're taught in the Mishnah, if you give a large amount of truma, it's considered Ayin Tova. It's considered chesed. If you give a stingier than most, you consider Ayin Ra. Opposite of chesed is Ayin Ra. The opposite of tznius is Ayin Hara. It's not an accident. Chesed and tznius are essentially the same. And therefore, it's not enough for a young man looking for a marriage partner to see, woo, this young lady is involved in chesed activities. But if she's patting herself on the back too much and seeking too much publicity and cold credit for her actions, you have to wonder. Rather, seek out the marriage partner who is quiet, who is unassuming, who is almost hiding the acts of chesed that are being done. By the way, I've been asked often, what does the young lady look for? If everything is so unidirectional here in the Pesukim, my answer, the same thing. Same thing. For a Baal Chesed and a Baal Tzlius, same thing. Gender blind. It's true. There's greater tzniyas expected of women. That's true. So look, go look back in Rashi and Parshas Bereishis on the pasuk V'chiv Shua. True. And unfortunately, in today's egalitarian society, that's being obliterated. That's why perhaps it's even more challenging for a young man to find a young woman who has been unaffected by this modernization, which is negative. But in principle, you look for the same thing. What about family? Everyone talks about family. Oh. Yeah, family is very serious. Goes back to what we spoke about before, Tshuva Saran, Drosha Saran, that traits are handed down from parents to children. And therefore, a family is a significant consideration. Is it absolute? No. It's considered, as we mentioned before from Rabbi Yashiv, something somewhat external. And there are many wonderful shidduchim, which gets the family with nothing to write home about. We believe, v'ahavtem es hager, that there are individuals who weren't even born Jewish, who have no Jewish family, yet. You know, if you marry such a person, you have a double mitzvah all the time, right? Or if it's ishto and v'haftem es hager, or vice versa, double mitzvah. And the same can be said of individuals who are from non-observant backgrounds and other types, which are it's not an absolute no. Nonetheless, I've often counseled my talmidim that the all the things being equal, which they usually aren't, but all things being equal, the most appropriate place to start is in something very, very compatible. Compatible, similar type of family background, similar type of lifestyle. That's where we start out. Doesn't always work that way. That's where you start out. Money? Well, our rabbis have said that someone who knows the isha l'shem mamon, who marries for the sake of money, chas v'chalila, is punished with children who are unfit. Bonem she'enem muhuganim. The Rama tries to patch it up, and that's only if the woman is disqualified. The Vilna Gaon says no. Marrying for money is dangerous. You can make an ava tluya budava, butla dava, butla ava. You can lose money. Does that mean that a person who has money is disqualified? I must tell you, I had that in my house a little bit, my own children. They were frankly scared off. Because they felt that if the person has more money than their parents have, which doesn't take that much, but it's much, much more, that they wouldn't be able to provide for the kind of standard of living that this person is used to. It was a very serious issue. Baruch Hashem, it was overcome successfully, but it was an issue in the other direction, contrary to the popular wisdom. I remember once when I was a bach in the yeshiva. So we, in that same base measure you described so eloquently, so beautifully, the third floor and first. So I'm sitting there and I get a phone call to that famous telephone outside. Hello? Yeah. This guy wants to, you should meet his daughter. Up front, before you even start, $100,000. We're talking about, this is probably still the late 60s. We're talking about, it's probably worth some money. That's kind of that equivalency. I said, I hung up the phone. I wasn't even interested. That's no sort of shame of looks? Well, you may not marry if you don't like the person's looks. You're not allowed. Come on, it says in Kiddushin. Can't even take any chances. So, okay, I'll go. My eyes closed. Asala Adam Shikadasha Fishacha Yurena. Shanema Biahaftal Recha Kamocha. You can't marry somebody whose looks are not pleasing to you. Okay. That doesn't mean you should marry four looks. Big difference. Major difference. Those who are looking for a girl who's, you know, can be on a cover of a magazine, that's not the way, that's not what we believe. Moses says in Masechta Shabbos, Benos Yisrael Yafal saying. By and large, Benos Yisrael Yafal saying. Their appearance is pleasing. And if you don't think so, maybe you should look in the mirror. Who do you think you are anyway? You're also not going to be on the cover of anything. Baruch Hashem. This is a serious problem. People are looking for externals. It's no good. The last Mishnah, Masechta Tanis, had the famous story of Tu B'Av and Yom HaKippurim, tells us that they would go dancing, the girls, and say, Tznu Einechem B'Mishpocha She'nisha L'Lavonim. That you should look at our family, because we believe in the continuity of the generations. And the Brisa goes further and says, those who were wealthy said, Tznu Einechem B'Mamon, and Yishal Tachshitim. Those who were beautiful said, Tznu Einechem B'Yofi, and Yishal Yofi. You know, everyone has to accentuate the positive, right? That's what my mother told me. Accentuate the positive. So the Vilna Gaon says about this, that the first line of Shulchan Aruch Kedesh, the opening line says, Chayav Adam Lisa Isha Kedei Lifros Vilirbos, to have children. Says the Gra, look at the end of Tanis, were there other reasons given in the Brisa? Liofi, the Tachshitim, we don't pass in that way. We pass like the Mishnah, Lifros Vilirbos. And at this, the Vilna Gaon says, Sheker Achein, Vehevel Ayofi, Isha Yiras Hashem Yitzhala. He says, Chein is something external. Tachshitim are external. Jewelry, makeup. Yofi is internal. Internal beauty. That's, you have it yourself. Don't need any jewelry or any makeup. But it's all Hevel. It's all Sheker. Isha Yiras Hashem Yitzhala. Look at the family where the presumably Yiras Shemaim is inculcated. So as to grow, opening sentence in Evan HaEzer. So, in pursuing Shidduchim, what do you do? How do you go about it? How do you do it? So for some, it's in your distant future. For others, it's for your children. Either now, or in the somewhat distant future. How do you do it? This is extremely culture-specific. In the Hasidic families, in years gone by, there were arranged marriages. And sometimes the couple did meet in advance to fulfill the Gemara's maxim, sometimes not. And you know, there's stories written about these arranged marriages. Some were successful, some were not. I dare say that looking around at my audience today that, you know, it's not going to work. In this audience, arranged marriages are not what's happening. So what is happening? So obviously the young men and women have to meet. So how are they going to meet? How are they going to meet? So you know, times have changed. They used to meet on the well. Like Yitzchak and like Eliezer and Rivka and Yaakov and Rachel by the well. The well didn't have to mean the candy store, the pizza shop. It could have meant the shul, or maybe summer camp, or other places where there were males and females mixing. You know, my parents, Alei Mashal, met at the Young Israel of Manhattan on East Broadway. Since we're in here in the Five Towns, let me tell you a story that I heard from Rabbi Binyamin Kamenetsky, Shalita. Told it over recently. he was interviewed by someone who was trying to write a biography of Rav Shizgal Zichron Levracha, Rav Moshe Feinstein's son-in-law, who passed away fairly young, and Rav Yamin was his classmate. I mean, so they have to ask him all kinds of questions. Said, where did the Rosh Hashiva of Shizgal meet the Rebbetzin, Rav Moshe's daughter? He said, in the Young Israel. So the guy asked him, but who was the Shatchan? They met in the Young Israel. But who was the Shatchan? They met in the Young Israel. You don't understand. These people just don't understand what that means. Now, where do you go? What do you do? So the next question is even more amazing. He said, where did Rosh Hashiva, Shizgal, take his young lady or Moshe's daughter? Where did he take her? To the movies! You had to pick Kolat Sala to pick him up off the floor. The movies of the 1940s, whatever they were something different than the 21st century. But what do? Is it depends on your culture, depends on where you live and when you live and why, what's happening. You have to, find proper things. You have to start just to get to know each other. Sometimes in the world we live, the first date is already, forgive the expression, a job interview. And every last nuance is fleshed out in terms of, you leave in this guddle or that guddle or this who knows what. I mean, that's crazy. First, if you get to know the person, why don't you start fighting right away? First, there's no chemistry, you can just say goodbye, you don't have to worry about all these things. So how long, in fact, should they go out? Again, very culture specific. In certain communities, it's very quick. Far from me to tell any individual how long he should go out. To me, the two extremes are bothersome. There's the original extreme, which used to exist years ago, and they just go out and go out and go out and go out. Some of them start at age 16 and get married at age 26. 10-year itch. That's totally crazy. I think even 1 year is difficult. Well, it depends when you start going out. My view is a person should not start going out until he or she is ready to get married. It can happen right away. It can happen down the road. But if you're not ready to get married, why are you going out? It's going to cause the Eitz Hara to overcome you. I know it's not politically correct in certain places here, but I'm telling you my opinion. On the other hand, those quickie deals, 3 days and it's done, also gives me pause. I like to quote Rav Moshe Bick, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who wrote in the Yiddish newspapers, 30 years ago, that a couple should go out at least 8 times before becoming engaged. Now, but Chassidus was heresy. So the Satna Rebbe expressed himself against Rav Moshe Bick, Katzi b'chayai mipnei b'nos ches. 8. Katzi b'chayai, 8 times. So Rav Moshe Bick responded, Satna Ruv, as a gross mesadik kedush, of ich ben a mesadik gittin. The Rebbe is talking, I have to pick up all the pieces. I stick by my tzak. And in our circles, I think 8 is not enough either. I tell people, as an example, purely as an example, obviously not etched in stone, if they go out for 3 months, it's good. If after 3 months they're sure, they've reached a decision, no need to wait any longer. And a courtship, 3 months, and an engagement, 3 months. That sounds good too. And these ungeschleptomyces. Not healthy, not good for you. No need to elaborate. Just not good. Sometimes you can't avoid it, you can't help it, you have to wait this long, that long, for other external reasons. I'm discussing you. generalities. The role of the parents in a shidduch? Again, very culture specific. In some places, the parents are in full control. All the child must do is say yes or no. Thank God they can still say no, but that's it. Someone I know quite well, had a daughter, kept getting older and older and older, wasn't going out at all, till the father chose the right boy, when the girl was, I think, 23, and a week or two later, the Mazel Tov, Baruch Hashem. This speaks not only to the greatness of the father, but to the greatness of the daughter. She was just sitting on her hand till 23. With what it seemed to be the great equanimity. Wow. Does a child have to listen to a parent in the laws of Shidduchim? The Rambam says no. But the bottom line, if you look very carefully in that no, is that often the parent's objection is unreasonable. Don't marry this boy or girl because I don't like the family, I don't like they don't have enough money or enough prestige or enough status. V'chule, that's unreasonable. The parent makes a reasonable objection, perhaps keep it aveim, may come into play. So you'll ask, who decided it's reasonable? We know the answer to these questions. The Rav, of course, the rabbi. So you'll ask, whose rabbi? So the answer is the child's rabbi, because he has a child. He's the one getting married. This is a very tricky situation. I'm speaking only in generalities. But it's quoted in the Rambam, in your day, this child. My time is about up. We really only scratch the surface. The halachos and hashkafas of shidduchim. What does the word shidduch mean? Anybody know what the literal translation, where the source shidduch comes from? And we're so used to the word. Where does it come from? You won't find it in the Chamisha Chumash Torah. On the pasuk in Shiras Devarah, Vatishko Ta'oret Arboim Shana, Targum says Vishadochas Ara. Which means, shidduch really means vatishkot. You achieved sheket. You achieved menucha. U'mitzenem menucha isha beis isha. We're going to read on Shavuos. This is usually I speak about Shavuos in this slot, so at least we'll bring it towards the end. That's what it means. The process itself can sometimes be anything but the goal is that hashket, that menucha, that all of us crave for ourselves, for our children, for our grandchildren. May we be zoche to witness proper shidduchim in our families, in our communities. Shidduchim which bring true hashket and true menucha, true serenity, peace, quiet. As wonderful homes are created, as generations continue to flow, as a credit to parents, grandparents, community, and all of Israel. Thank you for listening.
For the kind words, my father and mother.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you very much for
sponsoring. Once you get a copy of the tape, it's available.
We'll certainly get you a copy. MP3 is good also.
She missed the beginning.
MP3 good also? Digital?
My wife came early, so maybe late. Yeah. The beginning. Well, love to review.
Really? Thank you.
Nice.
Very
much.
Yeah, it's a lot of things.
Over 100,000 people. Yeah. He's from Chicago. It's fantastic.
Chicago.
Yeah. He speaks so sweetly. It's like such a...
Yeah,
sure. You can just like listen to it. Right, exactly. You can listen to it for hours and hours. Really, it's, you know, a lot of names. It's really very nice.
I just want to say, he's part two.
I was going to say, I'm sure you enjoyed it.
Part two.
It's going so beautifully.
So beautiful.
How many
young people came.
Coming up soon.
And he spoke about it in a way that was sort of very, you know, engaging, you know, practical, engaging, useful, with the emus, not, you know.
Yeah, that's all of these questions we're having to get back. A couple of others.
Maybe just passed it.
Yeah, you know what? I think I think I might have heard it.
At the well, absolutely.
Grossinger's used to be the well.
And see, it's fine. All the good places.
Just hands are up.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Whatever I'm coming out to ask for to come. I don't think I've said no to him yet.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I think we talked to a lot of the other women I noticed when you said 23. I think we're all getting much older age.
We're 5 miles right now.